You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. It's brought to you by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Emma-Louise Fenelon.
On Friday, 15th of March, a gunman entered two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand. For 17 minutes via Facebook and the website 8chan, he live-streamed an attack that killed 50 people and injured dozens more. Once alerted, Facebook took steps to remove the original video, but not before it had been viewed 4,000 times. The attack reignited a debate over the balance to be struck between free speech and national security, and in particular, whose responsibility this ought to be. The Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, described social networks as the publisher, not just the postman, in reference to their liability for material shared on them. And in the UK, Neil Bazou, Assistant Commissioner and Head of Counter-Terrorism Policing, published an open letter criticising the way in which some media outlets had reported the attack. The Court of Appeal recently handed down judgment in Butt and the Secretary of State for the Home Department, a case that addressed this issue in the context of universities and colleges. Oliver Sanders QC and Amelia Walker from 1 Crown Office Row acted for the Secretary of State in that case. And here with me to talk about the decision is Marina Wheeler QC, also from 1 Crown Office Row. Marina, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, Emma.
Marina, you recorded a podcast on a similar issue, albeit in relation to family courts, in August 2017. Can you remind listeners about how the Prevent guidance operates?
Well, the Prevent guidance is part of government's wider counterterrorism strategy. But its focus is on trying to take a proactive approach to dealing with terrorism. So its focus is on trying to prevent people being drawn into terrorism. And whilst in 2003 it focused really on violent extremism, since then it's expanded and it's expanded its reach to look at non-violent extremism.
And can you explain a little bit about how and why it was controversial when it was introduced?
So I think it's been controversial because what it's doing is it's sanctioning, or in fact requiring, the intervention from all sorts of public bodies, so schools, prisons, probation, the NHS, to try and have a look at situations in which people may seem to be at risk of being drawn into terrorism. So it's looking at, investigating, monitoring people's expression, thought, belief in a way that had not happened before. And I think it's been most vocal criticism to date has come from members of the Muslim community, feeling that because of the particular concern about Islamist-inspired terrorism, that they had been targeted by the Prevent programme. Now, you mentioned the attacks in Christchurch in New Zealand. And I think in that context, it's important to note that the Prevent strategy was always intended to deal with all forms of extremism and terrorism, right-wing, white supremacist terrorism, as much as Islamist-inspired terrorism. So I think part of what is likely to happen now is that the Prevent programme will focus more overtly on that kind of extremism.
And how does it operate in universities?
So in addition to the general guidance, the government's issued sector-specific guidance. And for universities and other higher education establishments, that's guidance that tries to help prevent extremists coming onto campus and radicalising students. So the guidance there is mainly focused on trying to assist universities in how to consider whether to invite particular speakers, and if they do, how they set things up to make sure that, say, those speakers' views might be counterbalanced by other speakers, that any risks that they identify can be mitigated. And what the guidance says is that if those risks can't be mitigated, then an event shouldn't take place.
And this sector-specific guidance was challenged in a hearing that came about in late 2016 and a judgment handed down, I believe, in July 2017, at first instance in the case of Butt. Could you tell us a little bit about the facts of that case?
Yes. I'll tell you a bit about Dr. Butt first. Dr. Butt is a British Muslim, a biochemist by training, who writes for and edits a website called Islam 21st Century. He's also someone who has taken part in discussions and speeches at universities, usually invited by the University Islamic Society. The views that he's expressed, which have caused concern, involve equating homosexuality with paedophilia, defending gender segregation, and also claiming that criticism of segregation and female genital mutilation amounts to an attack on Islam. So what happened with Dr. Butt was that the Extremism Analysis Unit, which is a body set up by government to advise on extremism, this unit had identified him, among others, as a speaker who was professing opposition to core British values and in relation to which some concerns had been raised. And what happened was that Downing Street, in the context of issuing a press statement about extremism on campuses, mentioned Dr. Butt by name. So in response to the press release, he brought a number of complaints and legal actions. One of those is a defamation case and a case about data protection, which is not at issue here. But the case that was looked at last year and has recently come back to the Court of Appeal focused on the guidance itself and also Dr. Butt's own convention rights, specifically his privacy rights, but also free speech rights as well.
And at first instance, how did the High Court reason its decision?
At first instance, Dr. Butt's claim was much more broadly drawn in that it included quite a broad attack on the PREVENT programme itself, and that was roundly dismissed by the judge at first instance. The judge also dismissed the other aspects of the claim, and the Court of Appeal has broadly followed the judge's conclusions, bar in one quite important respect about freedom of speech.
And can you tell us about how the Court of Appeal approached the facts of this case?
Yes. I mean, at the Court of Appeal, there were really two main issues. One is about how the Extremism Analysis Unit was using Dr. Butt's information and whether the way it was using his information and disseminating it breached his Article 8 rights to respect for his private life. And the other separate issue was about the guidance itself. And there were two issues. One was about the link between nonviolent extremism and terrorism. And the other issue was about free speech.
And what were the privacy issues that arose?
The privacy issue in general was a very important one because it's essentially about the circumstances in which the state is using and storing data about an individual. And when, in those circumstances, in this digital age, a person's privacy rights should kick in. So here, the court had a number of cases that it looked at, Supreme Court and Strasbourg cases, on a slightly different subject, looking at police photographs taken of individuals in public places, usually, well, in one it was a demonstration, in another instance it was a riot. But the court looked at that jurisprudence, Catt, in another case called JR38, and identified really the touchstones for when Article 8 is engaged, being if somebody has a legitimate expectation of privacy, then Article 8 won't be engaged. And equally, it won't be engaged unless what the state is doing is collecting systematically this information and retaining it as a systematic record. So those are the criteria. And what the court found in this case was about the legitimate expectation of privacy. And the court said, in these circumstances, where the material in issue is material which Dr. Butt has himself made public, usually on his website, and usually because he's trying to persuade others to adopt his point of view, those are circumstances in which he can't possibly have had any legitimate expectation of privacy, and therefore his Article 8 rights are not engaged. And equally, in this case, what the Extremism Analysis Unit was doing was not systematically collating a record about him. So for those reasons as well, the court found that Article 8 wasn't engaged.
And on free speech, how did the Court of Appeal approach the issue of the guidance?
So in relation to the guidance, there were two issues. One was that the claimant was saying that because the Act focuses on preventing people drawn into terrorism, and the guidance goes more broadly in that it's looking at people expressing non-violent extremist views, the allegation was that that meant the guidance was out with the terms of the Act and was ultra vires. And the court rejected that complaint. They rejected what was essentially an allegation that the government had taken a conveyor belt approach in asserting that a non-violent extremist will inevitably become a terrorist. And the court said, no, that isn't what the guidance is doing. And it upheld really the reasoning of the court below. And it said the guidance is aimed at non-violent extremism, but only if that risks drawing people into terrorism. So it is not equating non-violent extremism with terrorism. So that was the first point. And the second issue was about free speech, specifically about the Section 31 of the Counterterrorism and Security Act duty. So what Section 31 does is it places an obligation on the Secretary of State and the universities to make sure that when they are operating the prevent duty, special care is taken to protect the right of freedom of speech. And of course, in a university context, that's of vital importance to ensure that academic freedom isn't curtailed. The obligation on the Secretary of State extends to when the Secretary of State is issuing the guidance, making sure that that particular concern for free speech is included. And what the court found was that in a critical part of the guidance, paragraph 11 of the guidance, that special care to ensure that free speech is protected was not included. I'll just read paragraph 11, if I may, as it gives a sense of how the duty is meant to be operated. What it says, although I am slightly summarising here, is that when deciding whether or not to host a particular speaker, the university needs to consider carefully the views of that speaker. Are they extremist views that risk drawing people into terrorism or views that are shared by terrorists? And if they are, and this is the critical bit, in these circumstances, the guidance says, the event should not be allowed to proceed except where the universities are entirely convinced that such a risk can be fully mitigated without cancellation of the event. The guidance then goes on and saying that if an event is allowed to proceed, one form of mitigation might be to ensure that there are opposing views also expressed. And then the guidance concludes with another important sentence, which is that where the universities are in any doubt that the risk cannot be fully mitigated, they should exercise caution and not allow the event to proceed.
And it was this unconditional element of the guidance that caused the Court of Appeal ultimately to find that, in fact, there had been a breach.
Yes, the court found that the way that this was expressed was simply too categorical, and a reader would be entitled to assume that this guidance included all the elements that had to be balanced by the university in deciding whether or not to host a speaker or the situation in which it should do so. But the court did observe that to correct the guidance to achieve the a lawful balance would be something that was easily achievable. And although they didn't actually say this, one can see that perhaps the only need really would be to insert words like having regard to other duties or having regard to the Section 31 duty, something along those lines.
You mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that some of the criticism about the prevent strategy related to the allegations of targeting of particular communities. I understand that the guidance is due to be reviewed. Can you tell us a little bit about what might be planned?
It is right that the prevent guidance is under review, and that must be a good thing. In fact, as I understand it, the review was initiated in the wake of the Manchester bombings, partly in response to public concern that an atrocity of that nature has taken place, doesn't that suggest that we're doing something wrong and that we need to look at counterterrorism again? But the other motivation for the review is, of course, and rightly, to respond to ongoing concerns from sections of the Muslim community about targeting. And I think certainly the review should look at all aspects of how the prevent strategy has worked. And if there are areas in which it's not working effectively or efficiently, of course, those need to be corrected. But equally, perhaps this study review can be used as well to address any misconceptions that there might be about how it's operating, and altogether take the opportunity to improve it and target it more effectively. But I think it's worth saying that although one speaks about criticism from the Muslim community, of course, as in any community, there are different strands of thought. And there are many parents who support and actively welcome help from the state in ensuring that their children aren't drawn into radicalization. And the other thing to bear in mind is, of course, the point we made earlier about right-wing extremism or white supremacist extremism, and how important it is to make sure that Prevent is targeting and those on the front line who are responsible for implementing this duty to prevent people being drawn into extremism are looking at all forms of extremism, whatever colour and shade it comes in.
Listeners can find links to all of the cases and blog posts mentioned in today's podcast on the UK Human Rights blog. Marina, thank you very much for coming along and speaking to us today.
Thank you, Emma.
LawPod UK was presented by Emma Louise Fenlon and is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast and recommend us to a friend.